listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, oh boy, Chris Christie is in it up to his neck, and maybe to his eyebrows. I've got some audio to play, some clips for you that some familiar, some not so familiar. Contrasting Mr. Christie with some previous people who have made comments like this. We'll get to that in just a minute. It's incredible. But I think that, you know, one of the, while this is interesting political theater, and it has to do with the possibility that the governor of New Jersey may head up the Republican ticket in 2016, you know, 3 years hence, roughly, 2 years hence, anyway, two and a half. What's far more pressing is that over a million people have lost their unemployment benefits and are facing, I mean, literally facing things like homelessness and lack of food and lack of heat and I mean, just really serious, serious consequences. It takes on average 35 weeks to find a job in the United States right now. And Rand Paul says that to extend unemployment benefits beyond 26 weeks is to do people a disservice. I find this rather boggling. So anyway, I wanted to ask Congressman Mark Pocan his thoughts on both what's going on, what's going to happen in the House with this whole unemployment benefit thing, and also I'm curious his take on Chris Christie. Congressman Mark Pocan, the 2nd District of Wisconsin, in the Pocan, P-O-C-A-N.house.gov, his website. Congressman, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
It's always great to have you with us.
Oh, absolutely.
So let me, if I may, play for you a this is a clip number two, Shane, Chris Christie this morning. There we go.
And I want to say this to the television audience. I made my mistakes, but in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
Well, we could have shortened that a little, but I'm sorry. It was supposed to be clip number one. Here it is.
Politics ain't beanbag. I am who I am, but I am not a bully.
So, your thoughts on this?
Yeah. Actually, the first clip I was enjoying, it's his birthday, I believe, Richard Nixon. I come from a state where, you know, we've got a governor who desperately wants to be president as well. And I got the feeling when these folks get into the position that they want to get that national stage, a lot of things happen. And sometimes there's some explaining to do. And clearly, Chris Christie was front and center on that today.
Yeah, well, clearly. And what's interesting, what I thought was fascinating is he kept talking about, we don't know if this was a traffic study that turned into a political operation or political operation that turned into a traffic study, when back on December 9th, the guy who was the commissioner for the bridge, let me track this down, the head of the Port Authority, Port Authority Executive Director Patrick Foy, testified under oath on December 9th that no study ever existed. So Chris Christie did not know that today, although that testimony was given on December 9th. And I mean, you know, this was Rachel Maddow really broke this story on MSNBC back, I think, even before that. How could he not know?
Yeah, well, I think this is the kind of story that you'll see things keep dripping. It's a little hard to try to keep covered up what could potentially be out there. And I think we're just going to keep watching it and let's see how he reacts. My guess is, you know, this was a very calm Governor Christie, and I think we're going to get to probably a more bombastic one as time goes on.
Yeah, he had definitely taken his Valium today.
Absolutely.
So meanwhile, over in the House of Representatives, extending unemployment benefits, long-term unemployment benefits for people who have been out of work more than 26 weeks, has not yet passed the Senate, although it should pass the House first. I mean, you know, spending bills are supposed to come out of the House, but it is possible to reverse that process, you know, by flipping stuff around and putting it in an envelope, as it were, but the envelope of an old House bill. But Assuming that this passes the Senate, which is not yet a safe assumption, but it looks likely, what's going to happen in the House, and what are the Republicans? I mean, typically, if something is done that helps people, they want also something done that screws people. You know, rather than paying for this with by doing away with oil depletion allowances for the oil companies, or you know, cutting back on defense contractors, they're going to want to cut back on poor people, aren't they?
Yeah, this should be a no strings attached proposal. I mean, our job is to help the 1.3 million people that just lost benefits. Every week, I think it's 72,000 more people will lose benefits. It's going to keep adding up and up, and it shouldn't be a quid pro quo. I mean, we need to just get this done. It's the right thing to do. These are people who have to pay rent, have to pay for groceries, support their families. You can't really look for a job if you don't have a phone, if you don't have gas to go for interviews. There's a very pragmatic side of this, as well as, you know, just making sure that we're taking care of people who, that's why we all pay into this, is because someday you're going to need to have these benefits. And this is an extraordinary situation where we have to come up with a little bit above and beyond when we're at 7% unemployment. I think it's important to note that I think it was five times under President Bush when the unemployment rate was lower than this. We extended unemployment benefits without any kind of strings attached. So that's what we should do in the House, and I think that's what most of us in the Democrat side are advocating for.
Yeah. What political realities here? Speaker Boehner, I'm guessing that, I mean, you know, Republicans, as much as they would prefer to help billionaires to working people, occasionally they bow to the, is it exigencies, or how do you, however you say that word, to the demands of politics, and you know, like you said, five times during the Bush administration, extend these things. But on the other hand, you've got these Tea Partiers who are just like, you know, give people anything, what?
Yeah. Well, I think, again, you know, it's something that when you look at the polling, I mean, this has got support across all political spectrums. People generally know someone who's in this position. I mean, I've got a constituent right now, a surgical nurse, who's out of work and in her extended benefit period. It's not like she's not looking for work. She's got a very specific talent without an availability for a job right now while the economy's down. And, you know, we need to be supporting those folks. So I think that politically it's a loser for them not to do something like this. But, you know, granted, as you said, in our House, we've got these Tea Party folks who don't believe in government. Therefore, they run for office to govern, who we're going to have to get around. But I'm guessing if the Senate has something that can get some strong bipartisan support, I think there are enough Republicans that would join with Democrats and get it done here.
Yeah. It's, but that would be a violation of the Hastert rule, wouldn't it?
Well, exactly. And, you know, I think we're going to keep having to test that this year, because I think what we saw, you know, the Tea Party led us to a shutdown that, you know, Speaker Boehner and the rest of Republicans went along with. But I think they realized that how devastating that was politically. Now, they were lucky that a sloppy rollout on the website for the Affordable Care Act happened, and it probably, you know, gave them that bump back that they had lost during the shutdown. But I think they realized that this is hitting in an election year an area that they probably shouldn't be talking about when we've got, you know, just yesterday talking about the anniversary of the war on poverty. And now in our House, we seem to have the war on poverty, whether
we have the war on the poor,
the farm bill, whether it be, you know, not wanting to raise minimum wage, whether it be this. I mean, it's going to have an effect on them politically. And I think that this is one that we're probably most likely to win on.
Yeah. Any sense of timeline, sir?
We're waiting to see what the Senate does. You know, I've just been hearing a little bit today. My guess is they'll take it up next week. But, you know, I know that some of us are coming up with some ideas how to make sure we push this issue, because if it takes more than through next week to do this, we're really going to have to crank up some activity, especially as we get into the State of the Union.
That's great. One of the finest members of the United States House of Representatives, Congressman Mark Pocan of the great state of Wisconsin, pocan.house.gov. Congressman, thanks for dropping by.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
Always wonderful having you on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And 15 minutes past the hour, I got some audio for you. Stick around. And welcome back. Nate Sweet on the line with us, producer with The Big Picture. Hey, Nate, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Great. I am a living testimonial to the wonders of antibiotics and cough syrup.
Cough syrup is great stuff.
I guess. Anyway, mostly antibiotics, I guess. Yesterday, Mike Papantonio filled in for me on radio, and he's going to be on our TV show tonight, right?
Yeah, we're going to get Mike's take on the ongoing Bridgegate scandal in New Jersey. Governor Christie obviously had his press conference this morning. He was contrite, but not totally contrite. So we'll get Mike's take on that to see whether or not we can believe that he's accepting responsibility for the actions of his aides, or whether or not he should be the one accepting the responsibility for creating the culture where that sort of behavior was acceptable. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there, some Nixonian stuff too. So we'll get Mike's take on that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's a real variation. Where did my clip list go here? Here we go. It's a variation. Clip number three, Shane. This is
there's corruption in New Jersey?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Casablanca. Yeah.
There you go. All right, so that we've got that then in bed with Wall Street. Larry Doyle is going to be
with us. He is a former mortgage-backed securities trader with Switzerland, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase as well. So he's going to be talking about his new book, In Bed with Wall Street, which talks about the ongoing conspiracy to cripple our economy. We'll get his take on the settlements at JP Morgan, LIBOR scandal, LIBOR, excuse me. Really dig into the nitty-gritty of how connected and colluding, how much collusion goes on between our government and the big financial institutions.
Right, and the conspiracy really isn't to cripple our global government, although that's the consequence of it. It's really just to make off with billions for themselves. It's pretty remarkable. I understand the Republicans are now being coached on how to be empathetic and compassionate.
Well, you know, if they were truly being coached on how to be empathetic and compassionate, they wouldn't be Republicans. But that's another story.
I think this proves that they're Republicans, that they have to be coached. I mean, you know, most people don't need to be coached.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely says a lot about how they're who they're trying to communicating to. If they don't really understand how to talk to people who are unemployed.
Yeah. I think it says a lot about who they are.
Actually. Yeah, and who their donors are.
Yeah, yeah. So Rusty Humphries is going to drop by.
Right, and, you know, there's an ongoing discussion of a deal in the Senate to exchange certain programs for extending unemployment benefits. We'll keep an eye on that to see if it goes through, and obviously that will come into the discussion with Rusty as well.
Yeah, yeah, it should be very, very entertaining. Our poll question, our crazy alert, let's see here. Oh, and our geeky science segment. This is interesting.
Yeah, our role in Geeky Science Night, we'll be talking about how racism accelerates aging.
Mm-hmm.
Some interesting stuff, you know, creates stress, not just in individuals who are racist. It's on the wiki. All right, well, apparently we changed the story on that one. But
we changed it.
The wiki has not been updated for that.
That's right. Yeah. Well, what I have is thawing permafrost could release vast carbon deposits and unknown diseases.
Right. So we have to watch out for the deadly consequences of global warming, for sure.
Right, right. And our daily take?
Is about how why we need to treat guns like we treat cars and have gun liability insurance.
There you go. Nate Sweet, producer with The Big Picture. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks, Tom.
It's great having you on. We'll be back. Okay, here we have Chris Christie. This is clip number five. Chris Christie talking about how his trust has been betrayed.
I am heartbroken that someone who I permitted to be in that circle of trust for the last 5 years betrayed my trust.
And here, a little later on, clip number six.
What I like to call the circle of trust.
See, if I can't trust you, then I have no choice but to put you right back outside the circle. And once you're out, you're out. There's no coming back.
Is it De Niro? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Actually, here, this is clip number 12. I don't know if you know, but just after Chris Christie got done talking, his number three guy in this chain, Mr. Wildstein, the guy who was his high school buddy that he had put in charge of the Port Authority that ordered the shutdown of these lanes, was testifying before Congress. And clip 12, here is that testimony.
You moved, according to our records, to Des Moines, Iowa in 1938 or 1939.
I respectfully decline to answer, and under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, I assert my privilege not to be a witness against myself.
Now,
I'm sorry. That was Bobby Kennedy interviewing Louis the Cockeyed Frotto back in the 1950s. Here is Wildstein, the guy who is Chris Christie's childhood friend, who Chris Christie put in charge of the Port Authority. Here he is.
Mr. Wildstein, you've been asked a question about where you formerly worked. Are you refusing to answer that question?
He has asserted his rights under the New Jersey and federal constitution, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. My question is, does page 751 contain communications dated August 5th, 2013?
On the advice of counsel, I again assert my right to remain silent. Okay.
And that document refers to a meeting with Port Authority Chairman David Sampson, does it not?
On the advice of counsel, I assert my right to remain silent.
And that also refers to a meeting with the governor of the same date.
Mr. Chairman, on the advice of counsel, I assert my right to remain silent.
Ooh. David Sampson and the governor. Are we getting closer and closer to a smoking gun here? Who knows? I mean, Chris Christie is, maybe it's clip number 9. Play clip number 9 here.
It's clear now that in the minds of some people, there were political overtones or political side deals on this. And that's unacceptable.
Yeah, this that he's talking about is the so-called traffic study that caused them to shut down the lanes. And he is asserting that it was just last night that he learned for sure that there there was politics in this thing, but he's continuing to say, do we have any clips of Christie talking about the study?
Whether there was a traffic study or not, I don't know. It appeared that there was one based on what I saw in the testimony, but regardless of whether there was or there wasn't, there clearly were also political overtones that were evidenced in those emails and other messages that were never, ever brought to my attention until yesterday.
Right. It's been in the press. It was December 9th. Keep in mind, this is now January 9th. It was 1 month ago today that the executive director of the Port Authority, Patrick Foy, testified under oath that there was no study. There was no study going on. There was no study contemplated. There was no study. Around that time, television networks, Rachel Maddow was probably on the lead on this thing, but it was being reported all over that there was no study, that nobody could find a study, that nobody could produce a study, that people were asserting there was no such thing as a study. But Christie kept saying today, well, you know, the study, I don't know, I mean, whether the study got out of control or whether, this, that, and the other thing. That was clip number 10 that you just played, right, Shane? Okay. And so here's Christie trying to make himself the villain. This is clip number 8. Christie, the victim. I'm the victim here.
I am embarrassed and humiliated by the conduct of some of the people on my team.
Yeah. Never once did he say that he was concerned that he might have created a political atmosphere inside the governor's mansion in his team that was get him, right? Just get him. And he fired Bridget Ann Kelly, his deputy chief of staff, a top aide number 3 in his administration this morning. He said, I was blindsided yesterday morning when he learned all this. But according to the Center for American Progress, Adam Peck and Josh Israel, you know, writing over, blogging over the Center for American Progress's Think Progress blog, Governor Richard Cotty accused the Christie administration of sending a message by denying him state trooper protection for this is the former governor after he publicly disagreed with Christie. All of a sudden, his cops got pulled. The same day, a Cotty cousin was fired from his position at the Port Authority in New York and New Jersey, and a former Cotty aide was removed from the New Jersey Office of Consumer Affairs. So screw him three different ways. And then State Senator Sean Keen told a reporter that Christie erred in not calling for a state of emergency sooner during a blizzard in 2010. So Christie's staff banned Keen from the next news conference held in Keen's own home district. Christie aide told the Star-Ledger that Keen, quote, got what he deserved, end quote. And there are others. Christie has a long history of political payback levels.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm telling you, if Chris Christie thinks he put this thing to bed this morning by blaming it all on his staff, he is so wrong. Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Chris Christie, this is very, 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 very interesting. He said that Port Authority Chairman David Sampson, he said he was convinced he had absolutely no knowledge of this. During a press conference on January 9th, that's today, Christie said, I think General Sampson put out a statement yesterday that he had no knowledge of this. I interviewed him yesterday. He was one of my interviews. But that's apparently not the case. And then David Wildstein angrily emailed Bridget Ann Kelly that New York had given Fort Lee back the lanes. And this is from the email. Now, keep in mind, Christie's saying Sampson doesn't know anything about this. The email says, the New York side gave Fort Lee back all three lanes this morning, Sampson helping us to retaliate. Ooh, really? You know, I think the reporters, they're just now starting to figure out what the real questions are. TPM has a whole series of stories about Chris Christie. I mean, this guy's... He's a bully. He's a gangster. A gangster politician. There's no way to say it beyond that. That he's just a bully. Meanwhile, Senator Kelly Ayotte, a Republican from New Hampshire, says the only way that she'll extend long-term unemployment benefits, Republican senator, is if she proposed an amendment, actually, to make low-income American children who are citizens, born in the United States, but who are the citizens of undocumented immigrants, make them ineligible for the refundable child tax credit. Yes, I realize you're a child. It's called the child tax credit. Yes, I realize you're a citizen, but you can't get that money. And if you don't get that money, then I'll let them give that unemployment money to the unemployed guys, men and women, adults. She said the benefits are being exploited by people who are claiming a refundable credit for children who should not be entitled to it. In reality, about 4 million U.S.-born children depend on the child tax credit. The purpose of this is to keep children out of dire poverty. And because that's the purpose, in other words, this is literally for the child, the immigration status of the parent, according to the courts and according to the administration, is irrelevant. Well, Kelly Ayotte wants to change the law on that. This is pretty amazing. I mean, Republicans, it's like, was it Dean, John Dean, the former Nixon guy, wrote a book called Conservatives Without a Conscience. And it is just, it is so much, you know, what we're seeing here. In fact, Republican whisperer Robert Costa has moved to the Washington Post, this is Politics USA, where he revealed that House Republican leaders are having to coach the entire GOP conference on how to sound empathetic to the unemployed. This is a memo that this guy wrote to the Republicans, to all the the GOP conference. This is all your elected Republican senators and Republican members of the House of Representatives. House Republican leaders sent this memo, sent a memo this week to the entire GOP conference with talking points designed to help the rank and file Republicans show compassion, or at least appear to show compassion. Anyhow, show compassion for the unemployed and explain the Republican position on unemployment benefits. In the memo, which was obtained by the Washington Post, House Republicans are urged to be empathetic toward the unemployed and understand how unemployment is a personal crisis, in quotes, for individuals and families. It also asks Republicans to reiterate that the House will give proper consideration to an extension of long-term insurance as long as the Democrats are willing to support spending cuts or regulatory reforms. In other words, take money away from some other kid someplace else, or let the Koch brothers dump more pollution into the air, or let the banksters, banksterize more, or whatever. It's mind-boggling. I mean, this is just mind-boggling. Anyhow, well, we're going to get back to Chris Christie with Papantonio too here in the next hour, but we've got a bunch of calls here. Terry in New York. Hey, Terry, what's up? Thanks for watching Manhattan Neighborhood Network. What's on your mind, Terry? Terry, you are on the air. Okay, I'm going to put Terry on hold, and we'll try Scott in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I work for the Missoula Food Bank, and what I was calling about is what we've seen with the cuts in food stamps or SNAP benefits, and also what we expect to see if they don't extend unemployment benefits. Right now in Missoula County, one out of seven residents gets help through our organization. And since the food stamp cuts, we have just been crazily slammed. In fact, at the end of last month, we had people standing in line out the door. And there was barely any room in the place in below zero temperatures.
For food?
For food.
This is incredible. In the richest country in the world, for food, people standing in line in below zero temperatures outdoors.
Yes. And also, we have a great community that supports our food bank. But like I said, we expect if they don't extend unemployment benefits, it's going to get a lot worse. And the thing is, about 35% of our clients are underemployed. These are people who try to go to work, and a lot of them feel really bad when they come through. It's really crazy.
So these are people who are working, and they're not making enough money to pay the rent and buy food.
Correct. Incredible. Correct. And like in our intake, we ask those kind of questions like, are you out of your SNAP benefits? Usually we'd only find that the last week of the month. Now we're starting to see it at the end of the first and second weeks of the month.
Wow.
So, we're seeing some pretty negative impact already from the cuts in food stamps.
And this is from
and
the sequester.
We expect a lot worse. Yeah.
Yeah. The Republicans are doing so much damage. They are so hopeful that they can make so many people so uncomfortable, so much pain and discomfort that those people will punish President Obama for it, that they will assume somehow that the president is responsible for this. Because, typically the health of the economy is blamed on or praise is given for to the president, tragically. But Scott, thanks for the report from Missoula, I think. I mean, I'm sorry to hear it, but thanks for informing us. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Good to hear you back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just remember, this is Magic Jack. It's like a walkie-talkie, so if I'm speaking, I can't necessarily hear you coming back to me.
Uh-huh.
Why I called is actually, well, the first thing I wanted to say, I think Chris Christie is about as believable when he expresses his dismay about how betrayed he was by these two guys with the bridge scandal. That's about as believable as John Boehner's, are you kidding me? Right. I mean, they ask for it. They are who they are. John Boehner, he's the one who pretended to be so outraged in order to become Speaker of the House. And then when he leads those people on and they follow through with that, then he can't figure out why they don't respect him.
Yeah. It is, it's pretty astounding to me that Christie was trying to convince us all that he realized yesterday that there was politics involved in this, when back a month ago, the executive director of the Port Authority testified that there was absolutely no study going on. There was no reason to cut off two out of the three lanes, traffic lanes going to Fort Lee from the busiest bridge in the world. And how could that be anything other than politics or some huge mistake? And there were, you know, senior administration officials in the Christie administration who were clearly responsible for this and clearly doing it as political payback. And yet he is playing, perils of Pauline innocent. It's mind-boggling. Thanks, Johnny. Don in Pittsburgh, Kansas. Hey, Don, what's up?
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hey.
Well, first I want to say I was just in Italy. And I don't get Russia Today here, but I turn on Russia Today, and there you were.
Ha-ha, that's great.
How long have you been doing that?
For about 2 years, 2.5 years, going on 3.
Ah, okay, well, great. Yeah. It was a great show.
Yeah,
and, you know,
it's actually called RT, but it used to be called Russia Today. And they've got our TV show, which Louise and I own. We license it to RT. And it's in 600 million homes in 104 countries. So.
Yeah, of course, you know, here in the supposedly free United States, it's hard to get this stuff. We have to pick you up on the internet.
Well, we're over the air here in D.C. and in New York City and a bunch of other big cities, L.A.
Well, out here in the heartland, yay.
Yeah. But, so, anyhow, we just got a few seconds left, Don, before the break. Quick
okay,
one.
I just want to say, you know, that this latest thing with Christie, he's a transportation Neanderthal and a thug and, the cancellation of the tunnel projects under the river that would have doubled the number of people who could comfortably go over to New York from New Jersey in mass transit. And then they took the money and spent it on roads.
Right.
You know, these Republicans, they're just relentless.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Don, thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Visit TomHartmann.com for audio and video archives.
It really is all politics. It's just all politics. That is so weird. I'm looking at this picture of Kelly Ayotte trying to figure out who does this look like? Who does that look like to you? It looks like Michael Jackson to me. It's the strangest thing. David, watching us on Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Ferndale, Washington. Hey, David, what's up?
Hi, Don. I have a plea. I've come up with two really appropriate names for both our parties, and I would like to think that you could use them when appropriate. I would think we should call the Republicans the Republicants and the Democrats the Democrats.
The Democrats. Yeah. Well,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Republicants, yeah, absolutely. There's some pretty good Democrats, though. I mean,
Yes, but there are times when they are just as bad.
Yeah.
And certainly not all of them. We have some great Democrats. Bernie Sanders would be a good example.
Well, he's not a Democrat.
Those that need to be appropriately labeled when they act the way they act.
Yeah, I call them conservadems, but I get your point. I absolutely agree.
That's it, yeah. And keep up the great work.
Okay, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Thank you, David. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
You know what I think would be the most interesting question to have answered now with Christie? And I totally agree with you that basically you call him a bully. I think he's a mafia thug.
Yeah.
And Obama gave him $60 billion for rebuilding the infrastructure of the boardwalk, remember, after the flood?
Right.
And they never – and remember all the fires after that, after they repaired it? So they never spent it on new wiring. And we work in real estate, and the first thing you do in a situation like that is you have to replace all the wiring. So
after flood event.
I think it would. I'd love to follow that money and really see where it went. And I'll bet you a ton of it, if not the majority of it, went to derivatives and gambling on Wall Street.
I would bet a ton of it went to Christie-related contractor cronies who kicked a bunch of it back to Christie's campaign funds. Doesn't that make more sense?
No, but some of it, I think, went there. But you got to ask yourself, what the hell do these thugs do with all these billions and billions and billions? Okay, Bush and Obama both gave Wall Street together almost $2 trillion. That is unfathomable for most people that call the show that listen out there.
Right.
And these billionaires, good God, you can only sleep in one bed, drive one car, and eat one meal at a time. So you have to ask yourself, what the hell do they do with? They don't spend it on their teeth. They don't spend it on decent hair pieces. So you have to ask yourself, what do these thugs do with the money? I think that they're gambling addicted, and I think that they really play the roulette wheel of Wall Street with derivatives, and they really get excited, and that's their sexual pleasure, is the gambling of the huge amounts of money on Wall Street. I agree with you that some of it gets kicked back and paid back along the way, but at the top of the pinnacle, I believe we have some real psychopathic, sociopathic, obsessive, compulsive crazies that are running the casino capitalism, obviously in the ditch.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can figure is they're huge gamblers, and they bet. I know they bet on sports, I believe, but I think the real money is through Wall Street. These huge, massive bets. If they win, they can turn a billion into 20. If they lose, what the hell's a billion?
Right. And plus, they can always go back to the taxpayers for more. I think you're right, Armin. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be right back with more. It's 10 minutes before the hour. So Chris Christie's good buddy. This is worth hearing again. This is clip number 11. This is Chris Christie's good buddy David Wildstein testifying literally minutes after Christie got done doing his press conference, and he dragged this thing out for 2 hours. And I think he was trying to drag it out until Wildstein's testimony was over, so that the news wouldn't cut to it. But he didn't succeed in doing that. And when he wrapped it up, guess what? There's a congressional hearing going on. This is the state legislature of New Jersey, and they have subpoenaed Mr. Wildstein to testify before them under oath, and about what's going on. And keep in mind, Mr. Sampson is the guy who Bridget Ann Kelly, the woman that the governor fired this morning, and David Wildstein resigned a week or so ago. According to an email from David Wildstein to Bridget Ann Kelly on September 13th of 2013, quote, "The New York side gave Fort Lee back all three lanes this morning, Sampson helping us to retaliate." Okay. So anyhow, here's clip number 11. This is Mr. Wildstein being asked about these kinds of issues. Did you discuss this with the governor? Did the governor know what's going on? What is the real deal here? Here he is.
Mr. Wildstein, you've been asked a question about where you formerly worked. Are you refusing to answer that question?
He has asserted his rights under the New Jersey and federal constitution, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. My question is, does page 751 contain communications dated August 5th, 2013?
On the advice of counsel, I again assert my right to remain silent. Okay.
And that document refers to a meeting with Port Authority Chairman David Sampson, does it not?
On the advice of counsel, I assert my right to remain silent.
And that also refers to a meeting with the governor of the same date.
Mr. Chairman, on the advice of counsel, I assert my right to remain silent.
I think this is where we're finding the buried bodies. Very, very interesting stuff. Melissa in Miami, Florida. Hey, Melissa, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Okay, great. I want to talk about the unemployment extension of benefits.
Right, that the Republicans are fighting.
I went to the grocery store last night, funny story, and I was thinking about with the food stamps. Well, the food goes up tremendously, first of all. But if you have, say, $5 in food stamps, with the food going up and all the cuts, you're paying, you're getting $2 really of food stamps, what used to be for $5.
Because of the increasing price of food and the flattened price, value, yeah. You know, yeah, value of food stamps.
And then the cuts that they keep on cutting.
Yeah, right.
So with the unemployment insurance, now you have, it was hard to pay for things, anything, if you were unemployed.
Right.
So you were getting the insurance, and now they want to cut that or totally get rid of that. So then what are you supposed to do?
Well, according to Rand Paul, after 26 weeks of being on unemployment, if they take away all the money from you, you will magically instantly find a job, and they're doing you a disservice by continuing to give you any kind of money or help after that.
Right. So everybody's being disserved.
Yeah. Oh, well. Even though the average person in America takes 35 weeks to find a job, according to Rand Paul, after 26 weeks,
right,
you should have no more support. And how are you supposed to pay for whether it's bus fare or whether it's gas to get to a job interview? How are you supposed to pay, you know, to keep the telephone turned on and the house warm enough that you can answer the phone for when that job interview might call back? How are you supposed to pay for this stuff? How are you supposed to pay to live while you're trying to find a job? It costs money to find a job.
Yes, well, but I'm supposed to agree that I'm being disserviced also, right?
Yeah, I guess so. This is the thing. The Republicans are not presenting logic. They're presenting excuses. They want to screw the middle class, the working class, and the poor in the United States, particularly the working poor. Really, really badly, because they know that that is the constituency that, by and large, put Barack Obama into the White House. And they want these people to experience a lot of pain. This is just like Chris Christie's politics. This is payback politics. This is thug politics. They want those folks to experience a lot of pain in the hopes that they will then blame that pain on the president. Because, after all, he's the commander-in-chief. Shouldn't he be able to do something about it? And then they go on TV and radio and they say, this Obama economy really stinks, and Obama's had 5 years to fix the economy, and why won't Obama fix the economy? And you know, the obvious, you know, what's obviously going on is that they have done everything they can to sabotage not only him, but the economy as well. Melissa, thank you for the call. Very well said. Patty in Rancho de Taos, New Mexico. Patty got just a minute to the break.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks for listening.
What a blessing it is to find Chris Christie with his pants down around his ankles. I hope the same sort of thing happens to the rest of them.
Yeah. Although somehow that image does not seem like a blessing to me. But
well, I'm sure they'll come up with some other wolf to watch the hen house in that party.
Yeah.
On the subject of food stamps, Rush Limbaugh was saying that we're all fat drug addicts and that's why we need food stamps. And I bought an apple the other day that cost $2.50 and I get $1.10 a day on food stamps. And I'd like to have heroin and alcohol to cope with paying $2.50 for an apple.
Wait a minute. Rush Limbaugh was calling people drug addicts?
Well, he was saying, you know, the reason we need food stamps is because we're all drug addicts and alcoholics and that's where we spend our money and we're all fat. And I thought, well, I don't think I'll be getting fat on an apple that costs $2.50. He said something like that recently. And
boy, talk about the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, that's... Patty, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to KVOT, and you know, thanks for the heads up on that. That's kind of sad. Thank you. We'll be back. Mike Papatonio is going to join us and share his thoughts about what's going on here. He never fails to catch some little insight that has totally missed the rest of us. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. Angie'sList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at Angie'sList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartmann.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartmann.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Mike Papantonio on the line with us, the attorney and host of Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com. Pap, thanks so much for filling in for me yesterday.
Well, Tom, you have a great audience. Let me just tell you, it's well-informed audience that you have.
I agree. There's some really, really fine people listening and watching. I do appreciate your help. So we've got this clip of Governor Christie this morning asserting what he's not. Here he is.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, wrong clip. Here's the right clip.
Politics ain't beanbag. I am who I am, but I am not a bully.
No, there we go. There we go.
Yeah, right.
So I'm guessing you've seen this. Did you see the guy Wildstein taking the fifth?
Sure. Yeah. This is Al Capone politics, Tom. I mean, this is not comical petty politics mixed with bullying and intimidation, the kind that we're used to seeing from this character, Chris Christie. What we have here is, at the very least, is you have obstruction with a criminal investigation. You've got a whole assortment of minor felonies and probably some major felonies related to it. And then add to that the civil case that, you know, a woman died because of this governor's conduct. And it is his conduct. It is impossible to believe that Wildstein is his childhood friend, Tom.
Right.
This is somebody that he's known his entire life. And life doesn't take place in a vacuum. He doesn't walk into the office where he works with Wildstein every day and talks with him every day, has beers with him, and you know, interacts with him, and this doesn't come up. So what he's doing is he's just digging himself into a bigger pit, and it's going to be a big pit by the time this is over with.
Do you think it's possible that there's some variation on, you know, the old Shakespeare, will not someone rid me of this troublesome monk? And, you know, and so Wildstein and what's her name, Miss Kelly, decided to go off and do it?
Well, it's possible, but I think what you have is it all flows from the top. Tom, you know,
culture certainly does.
Yeah, organization always flows from the top, and you generally surround yourself with people that are a reflection of who you are. And this is a situation where we're just seeing the edge of it. I mean, look, think about this. Wildstein hands over all of these emails and these memos where we have the names redacted. We have a very important name redacted. Now, that memo is damning as it can be. I mean, we're talking about jeopardizing the human life, and they think that's funny. And they say, well, it's okay if school children can't make it to school because they're probably Democrat children anyway.
Right.
But here's where the edge of it is. That redacted memo, the persons whose name was redacted, and this is just a prediction. This is based on dealing with redacted memos and reading thousands and thousands of memos where I have to go to trial all the time. Typically what you see is it's where it's redacted because that person is a weak link in the chain. Mm. It's not so much that it goes up to a higher level. It's typically we don't want anybody talking to that person because I've already talked to them. They're freaked out by all of this. And so that's typically the first time you start seeing names like that redacted. And the other side of it is it's either that or it's somebody very, very high in the food chain.
By weak link in the chain, you mean somebody who might squeal?
Oh, yes. Somebody who is probably already talking. You know, if you look at this particular memo, that what they were saying is they felt bad about what was happening here. I mean, you know, that tells you a little bit right there.
Right, what about the school kids?
Yeah, what about the school kids? And then this flippant response by Wallstein, well, gee, they're probably Democrats anyway. Well, that tells me a lot. And it's just a kind of a second sense that you get when you read enough of this stuff. But typically when I see that kind of scenario, it's somebody that they're worried about talking. And so chances are they may be talking already.
Hmm. Now, I understand there's a federal prosecutor snooping.
Federal prosecutor's looking at this, and you can bet that the Democrats are full tilt behind this. They're all types of agencies. You see, you had Wallstein pleading the Fifth Amendment, but really when it comes down to it, there's all types of ways that he can be hit already for obstruction of an investigation. That's all it takes.
Well, can't they just impanel a grand jury and compel testimony?
Of course. And the fifth doesn't make any difference at that point. Somebody's going to talk. And look, this is not something that just passes. This is the type of thing to where you already have a man who is very equivocal about running for president. You have the media is just gaga about this guy because they just have such a lack of insight. The reason they love this guy is, and they want to call him a liberal, they want to say, well, he's a different kind of Democrat. The reason for that is they're always looking for something like that to sell. But this is a guy that his heart is not in it. His health is not in it. His wife is not happy about him even thinking about it. So this isn't necessarily the kind of thing that ends his career, but it certainly probably pushes him to say, you know, I don't know about all this presidential thing. I don't know if I want to do all this. But he certainly is not a liberal. This is a guy, three times he vetoed Democrats' efforts to do away with the millionaire tax in New Jersey. It was estimated $120 billion that he took away from workers with their pensions. He opposed gay marriage. It goes on. A $2 billion tax break that he gave to his corporate pals. These are directly traced to people who gave him money. People, like Prudential Insurance, Panasonic, Goya Foods. These are people he gave tax breaks to, gave subsidies to, raised the tax on working poor by doing away with the earned income tax credit, eliminated funding for women, women's health, where he cut almost $8 million in the Planned Parenthood program, the seventh highest unemployment in the United States. So this is not a guy, this does not, the media, the corporate media that is so woefully lazy, Tom. They are so ridiculously lazy nowadays.
Yeah.
That they say this is guy we want to invent. They don't have anything to work with here.
Well, I think he's been doing a John McCain on these guys for a while. You know, he makes himself available. He pals around with them. He's colorful. He's always got a funny sound bite. John McCain played the media really, really well for about a decade there before he ran for president.
He did, and I agree with you. I think he was very good at it. This is the thing anybody that's asking him questions needs to say, look, let me get this right. You might be president of the United States, and what we know, you know this from your history, I know it for a fact, is staff stays with a guy like that. He doesn't just, if he's got Wildstein day one, he has Wildstein day two, or people like Wildstein. So the staff that's going to be advising him, are they going to be playing, they're going to be doing this kind of thing with yuck jokes with China and with Russia? Hey, let's have a little fun and embroil us in an international conflict. This is just not just bad judgment. We're going to find out this is directly obstruction of a police investigation that Chris Christie knew about, and Chris Christie can try all he wants to deny it. There was a great cross-examiner. His name was, the point, Louis Neiser was his name, but Louis Neiser had a theory, and he said, look, when you look at a case and you believe it probably happened and you have this strong feeling that it probably happened in such a way, most of the time you're going to be right. And as I look at this case, I just say it's impossible for this man to have operated in a vacuum where all of these people, all the way from his staff, his deputy staff advisors, his press secretaries, his right-hand people, to where he didn't find out a lot more about what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, it was more than a month ago that Rachel Maddow was talking about this on MSNBC in a big way. It was exactly a month ago, December 9th, that the executive director of the Port Authority said there was no traffic study.
Right.
And
right.
Yet this morning, Chris Christie was still trying to say,
yes.
Well, I don't know if it was a traffic study gone wrong or something that went wrong and turned into a traffic study. It's like, really? Mike Papantonio, ringoffireradio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Pap, thanks so much for being with us today. It's always great talking with you.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks again for filling in for me.
It's my pleasure.
And Mr. Papantonio is still with us. Let's talk about the TV program. We talked about Ring of Fire Radio. There's also Ring of Fire TV that plays every Sunday at noon Eastern Time on Free Speech TV. And then it's replayed every day throughout the week. And so what's coming up on the show this week, Pat?
I have Howard Nation that's going to talk about the disaster of TPP. He's going to draw some very interesting parallels with NAFTA and CAFTA. Joe Cochette's going to talk about the new populism divide in the Democratic Party, question about who's winning, which side of the Democratic Party is winning. Les Leopold's going to talk about this concept of reversed eminent domain as a way that cities are trying to push banks out of the way where it comes to those banks victimizing their citizens. And then I have Seth Katz that's going to talk about how these fines that we see from the DOJ have no impact on curtailing the culture of crime in America.
Well, if anything, it seems like they build the anticipation of those crimes right into their budgets. I mean, BP had a budget for the oil spill expenses. Citibank apparently had a budget that was larger than the actual fine ended up being in the most recent case.
Sure. Well, what happens is people don't realize, and this is never reported, is taxpayers end up paying the fines, either the shareholder or taxpayer. And the way that happens is if a company, a corporation that has stolen money in one form or another, ripped off mom-and-pop investors, made a drug that kills people, you name it, and they have to pay a big fine, what ends up happening is they write that off at the end of the year. So it's simply passed on to taxpayers. They it's very rare that it actually ends up costing them any money. So, A, they don't go to jail, and B, nobody pays for it except taxpayers.
Yeah, this is mind-boggling. We have gone so far away from a Democratic Republic and toward an oligarchic kleptocracy. I
mean, yeah, kleptocracy.
I don't know how to describe
very
it.
Very accurate.
It's... And then we get Chris Christie and Mr. Wildstein. You'll love this. This is clip number 12. Here's Mr. Wildstein testifying this morning before Congress, before the New Jersey legislature. Here, go for it.
You moved, according to our records, to Des Moines, Iowa, in 1938 or 1939.
I respectfully decline to answer, and under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, I assert my privilege not to be a witness against myself.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was Louis Cockeyed Fratto testifying before RFK.
Right. I thought I recognized part. I couldn't see, but I thought I recognized. You know, well, there are... he has the same kind of Capone problem that the mobsters had. You know, Bill Baroni is another character in here. Take a look at Bill Baroni's background. He was Christie's top people in this thing called this bi-state agency that he had.
Uh-huh.
And the guy... his background reads very thuggish-like.
Hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's no surprise here. There's nobody to blame except Christie. And for Christie, I think the more facts you learn, the more improbable you start understanding that life is just a big vacuum, that you simply don't have a grasp of what's going on day to day. So I just think this continues to be more of an interesting story. I don't know that it'll change politics up there in New Jersey. But you have witnesses in this case that will not go down with the ship, I can promise you that.
It's going to be a very interesting show to watch.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah.
Mike Papantonio, Ring of Fire TV, at noon on Sundays here on Free Speech TV. And throughout the week, check your times and listings. And the website, of course, ringoffireradio.com. Mike Papantonio, thanks so much for being with us, Pat.
Thank you, Tom.
Great, always great to see you. We'll be back. Oh, it's our cheesy news alert here, courtesy of the Borowitz Report, borowitzreport.com. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie lashed out at the media today, saying that it had failed to focus on the single most important issue regarding me, which is my weight. At a press conference in Trenton, Christie yelled at the room full of reporters, accusing them of doing the public a disservice by not devoting all of their attention and coverage to the issue of his body mass. How much I've weighed in the past, how much I weigh now, how much I'm eating, that's all you clowns should be writing about, he yelled. Anything else is a distraction. Adopting a threatening tone, Christie told the reporters, if you know what's good for you, your next story will be about how tubby I am. The governor made only one reference to the notorious bridge closing scandal, offering this alibi. At the time that decision was made, I was busy shouting at a teacher. Right. There is, I did see one headline, I think it was over in Raw Story, about how this was giving the media another chance to fat shame Christie. You know, sort of like, you know, the people who attack women and based on their appearance, you know, the whole slut shaming thing, and that, you know, there are people that are offended by people making fun of Chris Christie's weight, and the New York Times, or not the New York Times, the New York Post, I guess, or maybe it was the News, had a picture of Christie, and the headline was something like "Fat Chance," you know, you're going to get to be president, words to that effect, and I think there's something to be said for that. I typically don't like to make fat jokes about Chris Christie, but Andy Borowitz is doing it today, so anyhow, we'll see where this all goes. This is pretty extraordinary. Christie's access to the presidential trail gets gridlocked. A lot going on. Let's pick up some phone calls here. This is as good a time as any, I think. Charles in Marshfield, Missouri. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind?
Well, I've listened and watched you for too long, and it seems like you're getting a little bit worse off all the time. But anyway, I'm 81 year old, and I've lived through a lot of these history that you read about. And I've been a halfway Republican, but not one of them that he wasn't on my ticket, so I wouldn't vote for him. And this idea of Christie's deal, what about the guy said that, you can have your own doctor, and just kept on saying that. You thought he never reads the paper, he never watches TV, he didn't know anything. But you can, I just don't understand. You'd make any big deal over that.
So your concern is that President Obama said that you can keep the health insurance plan you have if you like it, when in fact that was not absolutely the case. Had the program gone into effect that year, that actually would have been the case. But because the health insurance companies change their plans every year, that turned out not to be the case. Yeah, the president blew it on that one. And Fox News is never going to let him forget it. Is that, you know, you've been watching Fox News? You think that's the big story of the week?
I have watched Fox News, but it's like you. It's a little bit, I don't think it's as bad, but...
I'm not pretending to be a news station here, Charles.
I don't know what you're pretending to be.
I'm pretending to be a commentator. I'm sharing my opinions with you.
A commentator.
Yes.
I thought you were supposed to be a moderator.
No, I'm not a moderator.
You say
a moderator is somebody who is not taking a position and who is facilitating a conversation between people.
You claim this is a free speech station, so you should be a moderator.
Okay. Well, I hope I've allowed you your free speech, Charles.
But anyway, back you were crying one time about this pipeline, someone getting the right of eminent domain to run a pipeline down there in Texas. And well, I heard this story about Senator Reed, that him and his buddies got together to form a elk park out there, and probably some land wasn't worth anything anyway, but there was a ranch out there. So what, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't watch Fox News, so I missed that one, Charles.
That was Fox News that I heard that on.
All right.
Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I don't listen to Right Wing Talk Radio either, so I didn't hear it there.
Nancy, I don't know where, I have no idea how she got where she is.
Oh, well, you might want to try looking up her biography. She's really, I know she was on the city council in San Francisco. In fact, she was there when George Moscone was shot. No, wait a minute. That's I'm thinking of Harvey Milk. Yeah, when Harvey Milk was shot, and she's she's done a lot of really good work over the years. Charles, thanks for the call. I get it that you disagree with me, and you're entitled to your opinion. I think you've expressed it quite well. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence.
Yeah, how you doing? You know what? I have to beg to differ with your last assessment of Charles, and this kind of typifies my entire statement. At the end of the conversation, you said you think he expressed his opinion. Well, his opinion is based on lies, and he gets those lies from Fox News. Now, we've seen what this country has evolved to when you have a country that's based on lies, and we got to give Fox News the credit. They have the most viewers, so they are swaying the people with lies, and people go out and vote on these lies, and that's what your last call with Charles is doing. Yeah. Nancy Pelosi is bad, for example.
Yeah, Harry Reid is terrible.
Yes. Yeah, so here's the bigger scope of the problem, and it goes back to Chris Christie. Look, nothing, and I agree with Mr. Papantonio most of the time, 99% of the time I agree with him. But this time when he said charges are going to be brought against Christie or his cohorts, nothing, absolutely nothing will happen. And I'd love for you to comment on it because I really respect what you have to say. So,
well, thank you. I just have a few seconds here, but I'm of the opinion that because there's two states involved here that run this bridge, Governor Cuomo in New York State has some say in this, and the Justice Department is involving itself, I think that somebody may be held accountable.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, Lawrence, thanks a lot for the call, and, hopefully, we'll see. We'll see. You may well be right, though. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very nepinetically ugly, brought to you by the Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com. The good, Michael DeBeyer, the Montgomery, Texas restaurant owner, is earning praise this week for how he helped out his young employee, 19-year-old Brittany Mathis, a cancer patient struggling to pay her medical bills.
The 19-year-old doesn't have insurance, hasn't signed up yet for affordable health care. The medical bills, they're piling up, and treatment has stopped.
Okay, because they're waiting. Thank you.
So Michael DeBeyer, their boss, is selling his family's 6,000-square-foot restaurant to donate money to Brittany.
Look, if something as important as health care should never be left up to a private charity, but there's no denying the selflessness Michael DeBeyer displayed by selling his business to pay for his employees' medical bills. That sort of generosity is well deserving of our praise. The bad, Governor Paul LePage, the Maine governor and Tea Partier, has spent his first term in office harping on what he says is the rampant problem of welfare fraud in the Pine Tree State. Here's the thing, though. LePage's own study shows that it's not such a big problem after all. On Tuesday, the governor released data showing that Maine welfare recipients had used their EBT, their welfare cards, at bars and strip clubs around the state 3,000 times between 2011 and 2013. While those numbers look bad at first glance, they really don't add up to much upon closer examination. Those 3,000 transactions accounted for 0.2% of all EBT transactions made by Maine residents in the two-year period covered by LePage's data. In the end, though, it doesn't matter because Governor LePage is really only interested in demonizing the poor. Facts be damned. And the very, very ugly Roger Ailes. Fox so-called news CEO doesn't exactly have the most savory of reputations. Allegations in reporter Gabriel Sherman's new book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, suggest that reputation is pretty close to the truth. According to the New York Times, which just published a preview of the book, quote, a television producer, Randy Harrison, told Mr. Sherman that while negotiating her salary with Mr. Ailes at NBC in the 1980s, he offered her an additional $100 each week, quote, if you agree to have sex with me whenever I want, end quote. Wow, those allegations are true. That is very, very ugly. That's pretty amazing. 12 years a slave. I am, yesterday, I spent the whole day yesterday basically just resting and waiting for antibiotics to kick in, which seemed to happen around midday. It's amazing how they, how I, you know, you'll recall the day before yesterday, I was in the middle of the show. I was having to run out and buy cough syrup and stuff, and because something was just taking hold of my lungs, and it, I woke up and it was just on fire. The wonders of modern science. In any case, I am a member of the Screen Actors Guild, and AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Performers, and AFTRA and SAG have merged, and so I'm a SAG, and as a consequence of that, I've been getting DVDs in the mail from SAG, from the Screen Actors Guild, for the vote for the SAG Awards for the best movie. And I got a copy of, so yesterday I watched a couple of movies. That's, well, I was just, you know, watched American Hustle, which I thought was rather disappointing, and watched 12 Years a Slave, which I'd been wanting to see for some time. And it's just getting off to a theater for me is quite difficult, given the hours that I work in. And I hate going to the movies on weekends. So this was perfect. I could just lay on the couch and watch it, which is what I did, along with Louise. And then I started asking friends of mine, have you seen this? The African Americans I know have all seen it. It's not a very large circle of friends. It's, I think 3 or 4 people that I've asked, African Americans have said, yes, I've seen it. I don't know any white people who have you seen this? You haven't, Jim, have you seen it? Yeah. I really, for a long time, I wanted to see it because I felt like, okay, this is a horrible time in our history and I really should see this, but it wasn't like I wanted to, you know, because it's like, this is just another reminder of the horrors that were visited on African Americans by, frankly, in some cases, my ancestors. I mean, while my father's parents came over here from Norway in 1917, my mother's parents have been here since the 1600s. James Madison is a distant relative of mine, and he was a slave owner. And so I confess I watched it with some trepidation. I got to tell you, let me talk to the white people in the audience here. You got to see this movie. Because one of the things that it does is it helps you understand that it's really not always just about race. That it's about misogyny, that it's about, you know, there's this power thing here. These plantation owners were basically kings with little kingdoms. And they had, lords under them who were by and large white. They had, you know, people working under them, but those people were, you know, servants in the system too, as it were. And then, of course, the slaves were at the bottom of the pile in terms of power. And there was one scene where a woman who was constantly sobbing because her children had been taken away from her and sold is hauled away because she's just disrupting things with her crying all the time. And the hero of the film is watching her being hauled away, and he basically can't do anything about it. And it struck me that even if he had gone over and done something to help her in some way, and there was really at that point, her kids were long gone. I mean, you know, maybe he could have taken her a cup of water or something, but, you know, it's like, it was the system And I just, the feeling I got was the same feeling that I got the other day when you know, a homeless guy on the street asked me for a meal. It's like, it's not, I mean, we, you know, we all do what we can, but it's not just the people, it's the system. This was, this movie beautifully portrays a mind-bogglingly corrupt system. Another aha I got out of this is that I believe that the beginning of the me society mentality in the United States, you know, we've got basically two kinds of societies in the United States, two kinds of states, the red states and the blue states. And in the blue states, there's this sense of, you know, this is a we society. We're all in this together. And in the red states, there's this sense of this is a me society. And you got that Herman Cain clip. And if you could easily find that and play it, it's because it perfectly exemplifies this whole, you know, me society thing. That it's all about, you know, I got mine, you know, kind of thing. And it struck me watching this movie that this me society mentality began with slavery. And to prove that it's not always about race, that it's also about class. In fact, you could argue that it's even more about class than about race. Here's Herman Cain expressing this sentiment.
If you don't have a job and you're not rich, blame yourself.
You don't think.
There you go. There's another scene where this black girl, a Patsy, is hit with a bottle by the white slave owner's wife, and she demands that the white slave owner sell Patsy because she's got it that the white slave owner's getting it on with Patsy, or at least wants to. And he says to his wife, this is the woman who is the wife of the plantation owner, he says to his wife that he will get rid of his wife before he will get rid of this female slave, Patsy. And you get it that it wasn't just race, it was misogyny. That the power of misogyny is just mind-boggling. I mean, we still don't have a female president. The power of misogyny, I think, trumps the power of racism in many cases. And that comes through in this movie. This movie, 12 Years a Slave, it's just an amazing, amazing movie. There's a scene where a woman whose husband runs a plantation gives the hero of the movie a shopping list and says, take this to the store and get these things, and says, you don't know how to read or write, do you? And he says, well, sort of a little bit. And she says, don't tell anybody, you know, they'll kill you for that. And you get it that the way that power was enforced was by keeping people stupid, by keeping people unable to, you know, uninformed and uneducated. And it hit me. That's what we're doing with our public schools and with Fox News. It's like we're still working on keeping people stupid. So anyhow, I've got a few other insights from 12 Years a Slave. If you saw the movie, you know, in the third hour of the show, we can get into this in some more detail. Alan Ratner will be with us in 5 minutes with the news. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in a few minutes with Alan Ratner and all the news that the Talk Radio News Service. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, TalkRadioNews.com, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Give a gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. GoatsForTheOldGoat.com is the only animal group that gives you a picture of your goat and the recipient, and in all probability, that picture was taken by Ellen Ratner. Hey, Ellen, welcome to our studio.
Well,
it's
thank
nice to
you
see
so
you
much.
Person.
And yes, we still are doing goats in South Sudan, even though parts of South Sudan are at war. Our area is not, fortunately.
That's
yet.
Good.
Knock on wood. Okay, lots going on. I guess we'll start with Rand Paul being at the White House today. Now, as you know, the president's been having a series
really?
Of meetings at the White House with various stakeholders in this whole question of whether there's going to be you know, how they're going to look at data, whether they're going to collect megadata, all the stuff that Snowden released to all of us. So today there's something called the stakeout, although one of my interns once called it the steakhouse because they didn't know what it was. But and that is where people often, after they've met with the president, come out and talk. Today, Rand Paul, came out and talked. He said that he did not think that the death penalty or life in prison would be appropriate for Edward Snowden. He said that Snowden rightly exposed a series of surveillance programs that violate the U.S. Constitution. And he said he agreed, but with a proposal by President Obama's National Security Review panel to forbid the NSA from storing telephone metadata on government servers. A panel did recommend that providers such as Verizon or whatever store that information, and then it has to be a specific court order.
Yeah, and I would go a step further and say that there needs to be some regulation on what those providers can do with that metadata, too.
Oh, wow, to say the least.
Yeah, because if they start, you know, slicing and dicing it and then selling it off to catalog companies or whatever, it's like...
So that they know exactly... I mean, I don't know if you've been noticing on the Internet, but if you look up something, like I went to see The Lion King, so now every time I open my web browser for something, there's a Lion King ad that comes up.
Yeah.
Well, I already bought my tickets to The Lion King, okay, right. Done, but the ads are still coming up, and it follows you wherever
Everywhere.
You go.
Yeah, I know, it's incredible.
Okay, now we have Chris Christie, and he did a press conference today. There was a Fifth Amendment taken, not by Chris Christie. You know about as much about this story as I do, but the question is whether his deputy chief of staff, Bridget Kelly, really tried to get in the way of well, she actually promoted this bridge traffic. People were on it for 3 to 4 hours. I take that bridge all the time, and it can be very, very scary if it's backed up.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody pleaded the fifth. So, I mean,
it was David Wildstein, and he's Christie's old buddy. And in fact, you know, I think we have a clip. This would be clip number 12. Is that the? Yeah. Here he is.
You moved, according to our records, to Des Moines, Iowa, in 1938 or 1939.
I respectfully decline to answer, and under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution, I assert my privilege not to be a witness against myself.
That was Bobby Kennedy questioning a mobster back in the
day. I am sure it's the same thing. But also, there's a guy named Bill Stefahan. It's his former campaign advisor. He also worked for the National Governors Association, and he will be no longer working because apparently he was involved with this. Also, Chris Christie did say he's going to be meeting with each one of his staff to find out if there's anything more that he was not told. Okay.
Why is it that Chris Christie was saying this morning that there was a study, to the best of his knowledge, and that it looked like the study might have gotten politicized, a study of traffic patterns that required them to close two lanes, when 1 month ago today, December 9th, the executive director of the Port Authority testified under oath that there was never
no
a study.
Right.
I mean, how is it that Chris Christie never learned that?
Well,
when he's been at the center of this maelstrom.
Either two things happen. Either you get to a point when you're in the Oval Office or the governor's area where you are in such a bubble that no one ever tells you the truth, or you have what's called plausible denial. You know all about that.
Right, right.
You're the expert on the Kennedy assassination. So I don't know, but I'm telling you, has a little reek to it.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so. I think it's a very interesting thing. Yeah, and he also said his circle of trust was broken.
That's right.
We have a clip number 6. This was really interesting. Listen to this one.
What I like to call the circle of trust.
See, if I can't trust you, then I have no choice but to put you right back outside the circle. And once you're out, you're out. There's no coming back.
De Niro does it just as good as Christie, right?
Better.
So, anyway.
Better. Okay, so now there's the issue of this unemployment insurance. Now, we have heard two things, that a deal is about to be reached, but there wouldn't be a vote till next week. We've heard that there is no deal at all. But the deal that would be reached, if it is reached, would have offsets of $18 billion over a period of time. Guess when the offsets would really sort of start to occur? 2024. You and I will be a lot older by then, 10 years older. These would include final payments to doctors, all that kind of thing. That's where they would get the offsets. And
this is a fig leaf.
Well, Rob Portman of Ohio, Senator Portman, said that, you know, there are people who are, and I think it's something like $6 billion, who are receiving disability payments and unemployment. Now, how does that happen? So let's say you're a construction worker and you can't do that anymore, or you're an airline pilot and you can't do that anymore. You may, because you're, you know, your eyesight or whatever, so you would get disability, but you would also get unemployment because you can't do that job anymore. Maybe you have a desk job. So some consider it double dipping. Some say, hey, unemployment is something you pay into and your employer pays into. And if you're also disabled, that also is something that we put in insurance.
Right, right. Yeah, we all pay into both of these things through our taxes, Interesting, very interesting. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Always nice to see you. We will be back with a socialist. The first socialist elected to Seattle City Council.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour. And what an interesting day. What an absolutely fascinating day. Anyhow, I was sharing with you some of my observations from having seen this movie, 12 Years a Slave. There's another scene where there was a white guy. It was Brad Pitt, who was a drunkard and was in poverty and basically was selling his services. He was working with the slaves, picking cotton, to try to work off his indebtedness, apparently. You get it that at a certain level, well, up in the North, there were indentured servants who were white. There were a lot of them who were, sometimes they were lifetime indentures. Sometimes they were, you know, 7 year, 10 year, 5 year, you know, people paid for their passage over from Europe, things like that. Or they were in debt, you know, and, you know, they were basically somebody's servant in exchange for not being in debtor's prison, that kind of thing. But white people could melt into the landscape, as it were, whereas black people couldn't because of the color of their skin, because they stand out. And that, you know, just, I guess my point was that at a certain level, slavery was not just about race, it was about class. So once again, you had these plantation owners who were just the absolute masters of the whole thing. Right. Oh, okay, great. So anyway, I just want to recommend this movie, 12 Years a Slave, if you have an opportunity to see it, that it's really, really worth the effort. Kshama Sawant, am I saying that right?
Yes.
Kshama Sawant is a new member of the Seattle City Council and a member of the Socialist Party. Seattle.gov/council is the website. And Kshama, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us, what is a socialist in your mind?
First, I wanted to just make a small but important correction. I'm not a member of the Socialist Party. I'm a member of Socialist Alternative.
Okay, great.
Which is a nationwide organization of social and economic justice activists. And a simple way of understanding socialism is that socialism is a way of organizing society such that it is possible to use the abundant resources, natural and technological, in order to deliver a very high standard of living to all human beings in an environmentally sustainable way. And the best way to understand that is to see what we have today under capitalism, where enormous wealth is being generated, but the goal of the system is to maximize the returns for a very small group of individuals at the very top, you know, the most elite. And the rest of us struggle with really rapidly decreasing standards of living.
Mm, absolutely agree. And I'd like to reduce that to actual policy considerations. How do we do that? First, though, you mentioned the group that you're a member of. I should have had that written down. I'm sorry I don't. You want to give me the website for that as well?
Absolutely. It is www.socialistalternative.org. And I would invite all your listeners to visit our website. And, you know, you asked a very good question. You know, concretely, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And I would like to start by giving a very live example. You know that we ran our campaign calling for a $15 an hour minimum wage in Seattle. We know that this $15 initiative in SeaTac, a neighboring city, you know, where the international airport exists, has just passed $15 an hour. There's a huge momentum all around the nation. And to that end, we are organizing grassroots efforts in Seattle, and we are launching a big grassroots campaign in Seattle called 15now.org. So if people want to go to 15now.org, they'll find information that we are, you know, we're organizing, and we want people from all over the country to be involved in different ways, but especially people from Seattle. And, you know, socialists fight for things that most people, most working people will support: a living wage, healthcare, a decent standard of living, safe neighborhoods, a good environment, nutritious food, everything. But what makes socialists different and what sets us apart is the understanding that, first of all, in order to win any of these things, you have to go against the power of corporations, against the super wealthy, and so you have to be willing to pick the side. You know, you have to say, yes, if I am to really fight for these things, for my fellow workers, for my, you know, for my family and friends, then that means that I am going to go against the power of big business. And the way to do that, the best, most effective way to do that, is to do it in an organized way. So, you know, not only unions and the labor movement, but even unorganized workers, people in the community, can come together and bring all their strength together and sort of, you know, have a laser sharp focus on winning any of these demands. The other thing that sets us apart is that we don't just fight for these reforms. While we are fighting for these reforms, we are very careful to tell everybody around us that, look, we'll fight for these reforms. We may be successful getting them, but the fact is that capitalism, the way it works, these reforms will be snatched away from us. You know, in the next generation will be facing the same issues. Look at how often women are having to fight for the same rights over and over again, reproductive rights. This is what capitalism does. So we need not only to fight for major reforms, we also need to fight to change the system.
And, yeah, I'm with you. What are the organizing principles for socialist alternative, and why socialist alternative as opposed to the traditional socialist party or any of the socialist organizations that are left over from the last century?
I think it is important, first of all, for us in socialist alternative to recognize that it is not enough to have a few hundred people that you know that agree with you, and then you go into meetings with them and you preach to the choir. No, our first task and the most important task is to go out into the community, to go out among working people, fast food workers, childcare workers, everywhere that people are struggling to stay afloat from the race to the bottom, and talk to them about the need for them to get organized. We talk to workers who are making more than 15 and tell them, look, it's important for you to be in solidarity with low-wage workers and join the fight for 15, because otherwise we are all going to end up at the very bottom. And so the way to get organized is to be in solidarity with each other. And what Socialist Alternative does is we organize within our communities, within our neighborhoods, wherever we are. So one really good example is in all our branches in Minneapolis, Seattle, Boston, in Bellingham, in Washington, we were an integral part of the Occupy movement. We don't isolate ourselves or reject other people's movements or other actions because they are not socialists. We believe that there's a lot more we have in common than our differences, and the most important thing we have to raise that Socialist Alternative has been saying is that working people not only need to come up in actions and win these reforms, but gain the realization that ultimately we have to fight for a new political alternative. The Democrats and the Republicans have failed us. The two-party system is not working for us. We are deeply frustrated with the political dysfunction, so it's time to get organized and have our own candidates, have our own organizations that are independent of the big parties.
Very well said. Hang
this is the Tom Hartman Program.
Kashama Suant and the SocialistAlternative.org is the website, new member of the Seattle City Council. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And welcome back. Joe in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind?
Thanks. I get first of all, I'm not really a Christie supporter, but I do get a kick out of listening to the way you guys and the mainstream press report all of this. It's like with glee in your heart that you have something to criticize.
Well, somebody died.
Was that proven that it was because of this?
It hasn't been proven.
Okay, so how dare you say that?
Because somebody did die.
You implied that he caused it.
I'm implying that he may have caused it, yeah.
Okay.
I'm not implying it, I'm saying it. And and not only that, this was a threat to public safety. If you're the governor of a state, your job is not to create four-hour traffic jams to punish your political enemies. That's Nixon stuff. Do you really want that kind of person leading a political party?
You have zero
Or leading a nation?
You have zero proof that he did that. None.
We have 100% proof, his admission this morning, that he created that kind of culture in his office, that his senior employees were doing this, his hand-picked people.
I listened to the entire press conference.
Yeah.
You mischaracterized that incredibly, the way you first said it. You just mocked him about saying, he said that they should focus on his weight. That was a joke.
In fact, I disavowed the joke. I didn't particularly like the joke. That was Andy Borowitz's piece.
You also gave an implication that, a U.S. attorney has opened up an investigation. What you didn't report is that this U.S. attorney has given $2,300 to the Hillary Clinton campaign. He's a lifelong campaign donor, et cetera, et cetera. Now, let's look at what the right wing goes
through. You're not pointing out is that the former Democratic governor, Richard Cody, as soon as he call. As soon as he said something about bad about Christie, he said that that Christie was not conducting himself well and was a bully. Immediately that day, to send him a message, suddenly he no longer had state trooper protection. His cousin was fired from a position at the Port Authority in New York and New Jersey, and a former aide of his was fired from the New Jersey Office of Consumer Affairs.
Okay,
and
well,
State Senator Sean Keene, a Republican, told a reporter that Christie was wrong in not calling a state of emergency earlier during a blizzard in 2010. Christie's staff banned Keene from attending the next news conference.
Okay.
They told the Star-Ledger that he got what he... Chris Christie's a thug.
Okay, now let's take your standard for what a thug is, and let's apply it to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Okay, you said people died. People definitely died in Benghazi. Now, I'm not a Benghazi conspiracy theorist, but people definitely died. It was in Hillary Clinton's employees were screwed up. Hillary Clinton arguably lied about it.
None of that's true.
Now let's look at Barack Obama.
Joe, that's simply not true. Go over to MediaMatters.org. There's literally a book out debunking this stuff. Daryl Issa has been lying about this so aggressively and so long. It's amazing the people who watch Fox and live in these strange little bubbles. We'll just leave it at that. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. It's Thursday, my opportunity to have geeky science. So let's get geeky on permafrost. Permafrost is a fancy name for that frozen ground that covers about a sixth of our planet. And thanks to global warming and climate change, that frozen ground is thawing and melting, and that could mean major problems both for our environment and for the human race. Obviously, a melting permafrost can pose significant problems for the species that call it home. But the things that live in the permafrost, but scientists are now also concerned about the massive amount of carbon that's currently frozen and trapped in the permafrost and that could be released and is being released, actually, as the permafrost continues to thaw out. Research shows that the amount of carbon trapped underground could be twice as much as the amount of carbon currently in our atmosphere. That's a lot of carbon. And if that's the case and the permafrost continues to thaw, and all that carbon is released in the atmosphere, it will cause temperatures to rise a whole lot faster than has been predicted. But that's not the only danger the trapped carbon presents. Dr. Guido Gross of the Alfred Wegener Institute in Germany told Science World Report, permafrost can be seen as a freezer. You open it, and the organic material inside begins to rot. And some of that organic material includes viruses and diseases that have been frozen in the permafrost for hundreds of thousands of years. Uffe Wilken from the Center for Geogenetics in Denmark said that permafrost contains DNA sequences of diseases from 500,000 years ago. Living bacteria today could incorporate these genes and spread pandemics for which present-day organisms have lost immunity. If climate change continues at its current pace, we could be dealing with diseases, with viruses we don't even have a cure for. We don't even know anything about. We've known about the dangers of global warming and climate change for a while now, but this new research really raises the stakes. Unless we want to be dealing with a bunch of really nasty viruses and diseases, it's time to get serious about this greatest threat the human race has ever faced. This is really, really serious stuff. So, Seattle swears in a socialist alternative. Very interesting. Susan, in Danville, California, you are a white person who saw 12 years a slave. I have yet to find a white person who's seen the movie, and I know a number of black people who have. Are you with me, Susan?
I am indeed.
So tell me, first of all, I'm curious. I didn't see it in a theater. I was home yesterday with pneumonia, and I got the DVD from the Screen Actors Guild, and so I watched it at home. Was the theater, what was the neighborhood, what was the theater, and what was the response?
Well, I am in an elite neighborhood of mostly 2 percenters and 1 percenters, it seems like. But it was in a small theater, and it was probably medium full. And to tell you the truth, I didn't even look around to see who was there.
Okay.
It wasn't my concern. I love movies, and I had a great interest in this and heard it had some great acting.
It is.
And, yeah, it was going to be up for probably some Academy Awards. I'm very interested. I also am interested in the subject matter. I'm 58, and back in the 70s, I was a Spanish major and an ethnic studies minor, which is sort of unique, I guess. But
you were so what? I'm sorry, your voice is a little distorted, and I didn't hear that. You said back in the 70s, you were something.
In college, I was a Spanish major and an ethnic studies minor.
Oh, an ethnic studies minor. Okay, great.
Right. And so I've taken lots of African-American studies, Chicano studies,
right,
the whole thing. Being that I detected racism in my parents and I wanted to find out what was going on. So I have a lot of background, and I actually thought the movie was wonderfully done and acted. But I think they went easy on slavery.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a tough movie to watch, but it was much worse than that in real life.
I think in many cases you are absolutely right. That's the thing. I mean, we raised our kids in Atlanta, Georgia, and the story down there is that the plantation owners were benevolent, wonderful people by and large. There were a few rogue, crazy people. And, of course, there probably were some good slave owners. There were some horrific slave owners, and God only knows what the average was. But, you know, even Jefferson himself, who was a slave owner, wrote that he wanted to see the institution of slavery ended because he thought it taught children the worst of human behaviors.
Yes. Well, the thing is, the slave owner was God. And another interesting side that we haven't discussed is how the slave owner's wife really didn't have. She was like a bird in a gilded cage.
Yeah.
And you must keep in mind that when the black males got their vote after the Civil War, she still couldn't.
That's correct. That's my point, that misogyny in this country is I think, a more powerful political force than even racism. It's why.
Well, I don't want to compare them. I don't want to divide and conquer that. They're both evil.
Yeah, okay. That's reasonable. That's reasonable.
I think it was a very good depiction. I'm the head of a book club in my elite neighborhood. I'm a Democrat, and most of them aren't. But so I'm sort of incognito a lot of times. And I brought it up immediately how wonderful the movie was. And I must say the response was, oh, I don't think I want to spend an hour and a half or two watching. That's too tough to watch.
Yeah.
And these are college-educated, well-off women, probably most Republican, but their response was, I better be entertained.
Right.
So, you know, there are types like that. At the same, well, it's a tough movie.
Yeah.
And well, I wish more people, more white people could see it and realize it's actually showing a pretty easy thing, that the slave master is king. He could cut off legs or feet if you tried to escape. He could do anything he wanted.
Right. In fact, castration was a fairly common thing. And, there were some pretty horrific things that happened.
With that many people that he had control over, he had to instill terror to make sure that they didn't sort of come after him in the middle of the night.
Yes. And thus, the slave patrols that they had in the southern states, which were also called state militias, which is what led to the creation of the Second Amendment. Susan, thank you for listening to Progressive Voices, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Fascinating. The movie, 12 Years a Slave, and really, really worth watching, especially if you're a white person.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I have a feeling most African-Americans have stories like this in their families, but white people need to see this movie, you know. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This Christie, very, very interesting. Anyway, 12 Years a Slave. Kathy in Mobile, yeah, Alabama. You watched
it? Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi. What were your thoughts on 12 Years a Slave?
Well, first, because I'm from Mobile, Alabama, I feel like that maybe my comments might mean a little more than someone from up north, mm-hmm. being down here in the deep south.
Mm-hmm.
About a month or so ago, my husband and I, both white, went to the movies to see the 12 Years a Slave. We had to go to an alternative theater because the regular theater didn't cover it. And here's the amazing part. I would say probably about 90% of the audience were white.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. It was, you know, very well received. But I don't know anyone else other than the theater goers who have gone to see it either, black or white.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was a brilliant movie. It was just an
wonderful.
I kept getting ahas. I kept getting, I kept relating it to the current day that the roots of the me society, the roots of hierarchy, the roots of it's okay for there to be billionaire lords and literally people who are homeless in the streets. The roots of all that started in slavery in the United States, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And those states that did not engage in slavery are the states that are more likely to be more egalitarian now, and the so-called blue states.
Right.
You know, found it fascinating.
Yeah, this talk of that the slaves had it good, that they sang a lot and all this, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, what Phil Robertson was saying.
Duck Dynasty, please. They're still suffering going on, especially down south here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Kathy, thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Jamie in Bernalillo. Am I saying that? Bernalillo, New Mexico?
There you go.
Okay.
Bernalillo.
So you saw 12 Years a Slave?
Yes, I did. And like you, I saw it on a SAG screener, so I was by myself when I watched it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And like you, the more I think about it, the more points were made that are applicable to things today. And I think maybe a previous caller said it didn't really present slavery in all of its horror. But I think that it's important to remember that this is a story based on a real book written by the man that it's about.
Yeah, I have bought the book, at least the Kindle version of it. I've got it on my iPhone, and I've been reading it, as I go to sleep every night for three nights now, and it seems to be fairly consistent.
And I wasn't really looking forward to watching it, things like that. I don't enjoy looking at war movies either, so
right.
Things like that bother me. But I was amazed by the movie, and it's not presented as white's bad, black's good. It's lessons in human behavior that, like you said, can apply to today. Like the first slave owner was a compassionate man for the times.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother that was crying over her children, he wanted to buy her young daughter so the daughter could be with the mother. But the seller wouldn't sell her because he said he could make more money as she grew older selling her out rather than selling her to someone. So then they get to, I won't tell the whole story, I'm sorry, but just for a point. They arrive at the plantation and the woman's still crying. His wife comes out and says, get them some food and some water. And said, why is she crying? Doesn't address the mother as a person, but why is she crying? Well, she misses her children. And the wife said, looked at her then and addressed her and said, have some food and get some rest, and you'll forget them soon enough.
Right.
And went back in the house. And the amazing thing was it was said without cruelty. The woman was so enmeshed in her own society,
mm-hmm.
that she saw herself as being benevolent and kind, and the stupidity and cruelty of her statement just totally escaped her. And I see that so much today. People who are really good people being able to say things that if they would step back and not just talk to the people who think like they do, they would see that their thinking isn't always that clear.
Yeah, it's like Rand Paul saying that we're actually hurting people by giving them unemployment insurance benefits after 26 weeks.
Exactly.
You know, And that was my big aha from the movie was it's not the people, it's the system.
I think for the most part that's really true. I think the second slave owner, Michael Fassbender, and his wife, they personified cruelty,
yes,
both of them.
Yes.
And their relationship, they felt this cruelty toward one another so much, but the way they were able to express it was through mistreating the slaves, taking it out on the slaves.
That's right.
And I thought today of people whose children end up suffering because the wife's afraid to hit her husband, or he won't hit her because
yep,
he's a doctor and all, but the poor kids get one way or another get.
Yeah, and then there were also white people in the movie who worked on the plantations as opposed to owning the plantations. And
right,
they were in a situation where they could lord over the blacks, over the slaves, but they could also be pretty severely punished, I would assume probably right up to killed, without much consequence by the plantation owners. And that kind of middle ground of having to, you know, kiss up and kick down is the phrase that's used in business, almost describes business culture in America.
Yeah, middle management, I think, is one of the most difficult positions to be in, but you have to, you can do like they did, and you can become an awful person because of your frustration.
Yeah, yeah, and kiss up and kick down, and it's a wonderful movie. It's a thought-provoking movie. It's not, you know, like watching
exactly
some horror thing which is, I think, you know, so much of the coverage of it has been, you know, presenting the brutality that's in the movie. It is not as brutal as you know. Django's brutality was almost cartoon book. You know, cartoonish.
I never did. I haven't been able to face Django yet, so I can't.
Oh well, Django was a piece of cake compared to this, because Tarantino so overdid things that it was
an
old time western. You know. Django, actually.
I can watch that because it is a cartoon.
The movies. Yeah.
One more quick thing, and I know I'm taking up my time. You mentioned education, and what I drew from that was they didn't want the slaves educated, as you said, but they also were emphasizing he was educated, but he was trying to get a letter out. And so what struck me was they probably wouldn't have even cared if he could read or write, but they wanted him not to be able to clearly communicate. And I think, as you said, that ties into our current system of education.
Yes.
Even though now they're trying to emphasize the STEM careers to get people more interested in science and all, but most of the schools have almost totally taken out the things of humanities and the arts that taught critical thinking.
Well, and I think it also
applies. We want our people educated to work, but we don't want them educated to be able to think and communicate.
I agree. And I think it also applies to our media as well.
Yes.
It's really remarkable. Jamie Shano tells me that he wants to give you a book. Would you like an autographed copy of The Crash of 2016?
I would love one, and then I'll take the one that I just bought and give it to someone else.
Okay, great. Let me put you on hold. Actually, you can, if there's a different book that I've written that you would like, you can negotiate that with Danielle, but let me put you on hold.
That's okay. I'd like to be able to pass this one on, and thank you for everything you do. I really appreciate listening to you.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you very much for the call. Jamie is on line 3, Danielle, just FYI. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois. Hey, Marty, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, sure. Well, we were talking about the 12 Years of Slave movie, and I just wanted to mention, too, that PBS recently had a phenomenal documentary called Many Rivers to Cross, The African-American Experience, and it really dives deep into the full experience from when African-Americans were first introduced to this continent and where we're at, to them, you know, being promised freedom by the by the British soldiers. So it kind of details a lot of how they ended up fighting for the British, and then the British people got their backs turned their backs on them. It's really fast. It was a really fascinating documentary that kind of goes into all the plights that African Americans have faced over the years, including the, you know, Jim Crow, Deep South. You know, it just highlights the whole experience. I mean, even after slavery ended, just how difficult just working was in some parts. It still is. Right.
I mean, look at, you know, minority unemployment rates are twice what white unemployment rates are in general, and in many parts of this country, 300-400% higher than they are for white unemployment rates. Fascinating, Marty. I haven't seen the PBS one. I'll have to look for it. But 12 Years of Slavery is a real eye-opener. Thank you for the call. We'll be back with more right after this. It's 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And have you seen 12 Years a Slave? What are your thoughts? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Marion in Fort Worth, Texas, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Marion, you saw the movie?
Yes, I did.
Your thoughts?
And I thought it was great. It was hard to watch, but, you know, I wanted to watch it because, you know, I think that's a chapter in our history that a lot of people nowadays try to sweep up under the rug as if it had, you know, that was something we did bad back in those times.
Yeah.
But now, you know, it's not like that anymore. I don't own any slaves or anything like that, but, you know, my argument is you benefit from it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
I think there's a modern day version of wage slavery, which, you know, to make too much of a comparison diminishes the horrors of real slavery. It's like calling people Hitler and diminishing the Holocaust.
Yeah.
But there is a system today that has brutality. It's not as serious a brutality, but it has brutality built into it. It has coercion built into it. It has fear built into it. And it's this raw, naked capitalism. It's this laissez-faire capitalism that's promoted and preached by the libertarians and the Republicans.
I agree with that totally. I've said that for years. I think capitalism can be good, but it needs to be closely watched.
Yeah, it needs to be regulated, moderated.
It does.
Yeah,
you know, and they fight every regulation the Democrats or whomever has tried to put in place. They don't want it,
yeah.
You know, because they want business to be able to do whatever they want, which in turn makes.
Which is sort of like the plantation owners, you know, they could do whatever they wanted.
You know, the rich get richer, like what's happening right now. Yeah. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer,
yeah.
You know, because they really don't care so much about the poor. They don't care at all, if you ask me.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Marion, I want to get another caller in here, if I may. Mary in Eden, North Carolina. Hey, Mary, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. What's up?
Hey, Tom, love your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment the gentleman that called in complaining about the not being able, the Health Care Act and not being able to keep your doctor.
Yeah, the President Obama lied to us. I mean, that's the talking point on Fox News this week.
Yeah, I've always had insurance through my employer because I've always worked.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had the same problem, recently. And I have good insurance where I work,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had three doctors that just left, didn't say a word. I don't know what happened to them, although I suspect that it had to do with their practice being actually owned by some corporation, because one of the doctors that I liked, and this was way back in like 04, 05, 06, he was in with another doctor when I first started going to her. I loved her. She was great. Okay, she moved to her own practice, and I remember her saying that, you know, she didn't want to work. She wanted to have her own practice and be her own boss.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't long, maybe a year or so. She was taken in by another corporation because they always bring in a physician.
Yeah.
I've noticed that. Okay, and then not long after that, poof, she's gone.
Wow. Yeah, it's the consolidation, it is remarkable. Mary, another symptom of our broken system. Mary, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you, and Steve in Erie, Colorado. You wanted to talk about socialism?
I just wanted to talk about the socialist mindset. Mm-hmm. And socialist, not from a political perspective, but just my understanding of the socialist aspect is that it's about caring for your neighbor and making sure that everybody has an equal chance mm-hmm. at, you know, succeeding in life. And I know there's people out there, you know, who on the capitalist side who say, oh, yeah, everybody has the same chance. But that's not really true. And, you know, I have a sentence that I like to use in conversation on occasion, which is history in a sentence, which is I beat you up, I steal your stuff mm-hmm. is what I would say history kind of reveals if we take a look at it and we go looking at slavery and slave owners and plantations. It goes even further back, and it has to do with land titles that were given by the king of England who captured America and gave that to somebody who then had indentured servants who worked for him, all of that stuff.
Right. Well, and it was taken from Native Americans who were killed.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's so much in our history that we are all responsible for in some way, shape, or form. And at some point, there's no, at least in my opinion, I don't think there's any governmental system that really can address this. I think it has to do with own personal responsibility.
Yeah.
And I'm working on right now in my business of trying to change my business from being my business to being our business.
So you're doing an ESOP?
Turning it into a cooperative business where everybody has the opportunity to work and earn a position, prove that they have the ethic that matches the system that we have in place, and then they have a legitimate ownership share. They have a legitimate right to voice. They have a legitimate opportunity to, you know, have something that in the long term will continue to grow beyond any individual. Because to be honest, the way I look at it, you know, there are all these people out there who want to say, well, I made my business what it is today.
Right.
You know, and it's this big.
But it's really their people who do.
But it's
what's your business,
people.
Steve?
Everybody is a part of it. I'm a roofer and a roofing contractor, have been for 40 years.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's really important to recognize that the people at the bottom, and especially in my business, who sweat the hardest, get the dirtiest, you know, do the grunt work. Mm. Are the people that anybody who, another part of our capitalist ideal is that somehow you're supposed to make the most amount of money for the least amount of effort.
Right.
And in my opinion, that's actually a cost. Because if you're not adding any value to the products that you're making money off of, you're actually taking from it. And it costs everybody else because of that.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it's very, very well said. Steve, thank you for the call. Very, very well said. Audrey in Richton Park, Illinois. Hey, Audrey, what's up?
Hi. I was calling regarding the issue presented by the movie 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the movie. I'm African American. I grew up in the 70s. It was a time where they wanted us to be educated, went to a Catholic school, Black History Month, it was on. Mm-hmm. It was almost like the world stopped, and we learned about African American inventors. We weren't just told we were once slaves and then we were freed and there was civil rights in the end. But I was glad to hear the revelations or eye openings that you received from the movie, because what I have been telling people for a while now is that racism in and of itself is not the primary goal of these people at the top of our economic food chain. Racism is their primary weapon.
Mm-hmm.
They have others. There's sexism, ageism, so on and so forth. But their primary goal is money supremacy.
Yep.
What they've done is they've institutionalized poverty. They make it look like it's a black thing or a brown thing or a red thing, that white people cannot understand. But in fact, they don't care about poor working class white people either. They would just as soon see them ruined or underfoot with the rest of us.
Well, and oddly, that's one of the things that you take away from watching this movie, 12 Years a Slave.
Just observing how this, especially this current push now by these Tea Party nutcases and some of the Democrats, these people who have this objectivism, this extreme selfishness, this extreme greed going on, and they are so short-sighted. I'm trying to figure out just how much money, how much is gold and whatever wealth they are trying to claim all their own is worth on a pile of rubble and ashes when they destroy this nation that has so blessed them to have the wealth that they have just because they want to have it all. They wish to have this power without having responsibility, without a sense of responsibility for the people that over whom some of them have authority, and without any sense of accountability for the harm that they do.
Well, and
that's how they see.
This is the grand imperative of modern day business, modern day capitalism in the United States, is to internalize profits, to take the profit into the management, into the company, and to socialize or externalize losses, so to externalize costs. So if your if your company produces poison, dump the poison out in the air or the water. Don't pay for disposing of it.
The people who are suffering from it pay for disposal.
That's correct. That's correct.
And then there's also they mentioned, one of the previous callers mentioned a documentary program PBS. Mm-hmm. Oprah Winfrey's network had a show on a documentary on not too long ago called Black Girls, where we're showing why we have such low self-esteem. Such issues with,
It sounds fascinating. Audrey, I'm out of time. I'm sorry. We're at the end of very end of the show here. But thank you for your call and your very thoughtful and insightful comments. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. That means Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders will be here talking about the issues of the day and taking your calls, plus Anything Goes Friday, your chance to choose your topic. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It begins with you. Tag. You're it. Get out there, get active, and occupy
something. You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.